Latin Radio.
As I mentioned, social media giants have been put on notice by Australia's online safety regulator to show how they're tackling online terrorist and extremist material. Joining us now, Dr. Ben Rich is co-director of the Curtin Extremism Research Network, and it really is a very frightening situation. Good afternoon to you, Ben.
Good afternoon.
How extreme is this?
Well, unfortunately, what we've seen over the past really decade is a business model that's employed by numerous social media bigwigs, whether we're talking about X / Twitter, whether we're talking about Facebook, that is all about creating tension in communities. They've realised that the way you get people engaged, the way you get them stuck into the various programs that they offer is to foster a sense of animosity. And what this does is it creates clicks, it generates ad revenue, and it basically drives their business model. And unfortunately, all of this comes out of a series of decisions that were made back in the early 2000s in the United States to basically try and unregulate these spaces as much as possible to allow for growth. So basically to allow them to be unconstrained so they could naturally kind of go where the invisible hand of the market would guide them.
Under the banner of freedom of speech, do you think?
That was certainly a part of it, and there are a lot of questions now about how to effectively regulate these spaces without stifling freedom of speech. But I think we're very much in uncharted territories. You know, people often talk about the digital space as being the new town square. But the difference is, you know, if you got up in the town square and you started spouting off, you know, racially charged rhetoric, you would probably be shouted down pretty quickly in the best of times. And the problem is that the risk factors for people who are employing these types of strategies, often quite deliberately, are pretty minimal compared to that old sort of touch grass real world experience that we would have traditionally.
Very, very, what can I say? Not impressive platform. It's a platform's a very, have such a meaning to so many people. They believe things so readily, don't they? If they're sort of slightly prone to something, when these platforms are used for those areas, people can get so caught up in it, can't they?
Well, I mean, it's a neutral thing.
Yeah.
Like it's great because in some ways social media and the online have allowed for, you know, communities that would previously not have existed around various interests, hobbies, sets of beliefs that are non-harmful to emerge in a way that just wasn't possible in the past. But at the same time, that has a dark side, you know, and we've seen this in all sorts of things, you know, the growth of, for instance, you know, online pedophile rings and stuff like that, you know, where these people would have previously been very isolated from one another, now can quite easily find one another, build communities, build capacity to pursue those types of illegal interests. So it's a double-edged sword.
Yes, it certainly is. Do you think the platforms are being exploited by terrorists and violent extremists, Ben?
We definitely know they are. We know that you know, we look at the sort of the MOs, documents that have been released, strategies, documents that have been released by numerous extremist groups. They understand that there is this liminal space that a lot of these platforms are occupying. They're very savvy. They're very able to exploit the sort of the distance between the legal mechanisms that are often 10, 20, 30 years behind, often lack effective enforcement mechanisms because, you know, again, how do you effectively moderate, you know, billions and billions and billions of conversations every day? And the current approach to that, you know, is often either utilizing AI that can be gotten around quite quickly. If you change your, say, signifiers that you're using, so instead of, you know, saying white nationalism, you replace the term with something else. So the AI jet programmers are constantly playing a game of catch-up. Or they outsource it to the developing world for someone who's very underpaid in a part of the world that maybe they don't understand the kind of cultural significance of particular conversations and signifiers. And so either they crack down too much or they aren't able to crack down enough.
Yeah, very true. Is there anything that's been done, do you think, to stop online extremism?
I mean, there's a lot. One of the things I think we have to start doing is trying to build a kind of social resilience around this type of messaging. So we need to understand, why do these messages resonate with people so much? So if we look at, for instance, the growth of anti-vaccine sentiment during COVID, what we had was a lot of people who felt kind of let down by the government. They were seeing things, for instance, that were happening in Melbourne with the crackdowns that were arguably a bit heavy-handed. And they were perhaps experiencing things in their own personal lives, such as, you know, if they had a negative response to the vaccine, they tried to express some kind of anxiety around that and they were getting shouted down. That's only going to cause people to go further and further down these rabbit holes. And I think because when we compound this with the current moment that we're living in, we have an alienation crisis, we have a mental health crisis, we have a lot of people feeling very, very isolated, looking for other stories that help them to understand the world around them, maybe not feeling that the mainstream stories or the people that sort of enforce and articulate those narratives are trustworthy. We need to start thinking about that. That's obviously a much harder question than just moderate.
Yeah, of course.
At the end of the day, the moderation, you know, it's necessary, but it's something that is really treating the symptom for the wound.
Well, the Air Safety Commissioner has issued, as we mentioned, legal notices to Meta, X, Google, WhatsApp, Telegram and Reddit, demanding they disclose their anti-terrorism efforts. Are they having to take notice of this and report?
Well, part of the problem is, at the end of the day, attributing culpability. It's one thing to say, okay, one particular person, you know, engaged in an act of violence and then trying to lay it back on the particular organisation that, you know, they were on. But I think drawing that line is often quite difficult, and oftentimes the solutions are quite unsatisfactory, because what you're doing is you're talking about someone who has emerged out of a wider milieu. And so maybe they are the sort of the worst manifestation of that. But if we just get obsessed with, you know, dealing with the case-by-case basis as they come along, we're never going to deal with the root of the problem.
Yeah. Do you think we will see some changes in the future? Will it take long, do you think? You mentioned we are sort of going through a phase of catch-up, which is true. Technology is changing very quickly all the time. I mean, are we going to have to wait years? And what was we as users, what can we do to help along the line? Anything?
Well, as users, I mean, my philosophy is always about making it local, looking out for those people in our lives that are maybe, you know, falling down these rabbit holes, trying to figure out what is going on in their life that perhaps has made them susceptible to these ideas in the first place. There isn't a huge amount we can do about the broader online. Like, these are things that I think we're going through a big, almost species-level renegotiation. But, you know, to have agency, to not feel totally hopeless, you know, looking out for those people that are becoming isolated, becoming alienated, trying to give them a bit of a helping hand, perhaps maybe listen to them, even if they're saying things that we find maybe perhaps a bit personally off-putting. Giving them an ear to listen to, because what happens is you go and you read the biographies of people who've become radicalized, and so often the recurrent theme is a feeling of disconnection from those around them, a feeling that no one's listening to them, a feeling that their needs and anxieties aren't being heard and taken care of. And oftentimes it can be that simple. It can be really hard, I think. You know, all of us are constantly run off our feet, and, you know, the modern life is increasingly chaotic, but I think it's something that we all have to be aware of, and I think we all have to feel that there is something we can actually do. We're not just totally helpless in the face of this.
We have to be very concerned, I think, and aware of people's vulnerability, and of course, feeling isolated and mental health issues. That's a big, big thing at the moment, isn't it, to be looked at?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you look at, you know, the profile of this, the guy in Bondi clearly had been going down a really bad trajectory for a very long time. I wouldn't be surprised if we look at what happened with the stabbing of this priest and the young man that was involved in that. There would have potentially been times that, you know, some sort of positive intervention could have occurred. But what we look at around these days, you know, all over the place, with instances of political violence and other forms of mass violence that might not be precisely, quotes, political by traditional standards, but there is this connective tissue of alienation, mental health challenges, and feeling that perhaps, you know, they could have had greater levels of support before they got to this point.
Well, let's hope we can see some definite change in the very, very near future. Thank you for looking into it, Ben, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you indeed. Dr. Ben Rich joining us, from the co-director of the Curtin Extremism Research Network.